Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Well, the elements of what he did are all accepted practices in tax rules and real estate business. He's taken them to extremes, and he's taken them beyond the point where he has a reasonable expectation of a profit in the real estate business, as far as, you know, what I've seen and read. The underlying principle would be that you can conduct business and spend money and deduct your expenses if you're in an enterprise that you expect to become profitable at some point. Some businesses take longer than others. Real estate, you know, horse racing, it might take more than the usual calendar year to realize a profit. So in the depreciation, you're deducting the cost of some assets over a long period of time, but the expectation is at some point the operations are going to become profitable and make you money. At some point, you're supposed to say, if I'm not any good at this, I have to stop. That's what it looks like in the reporting we have. This guy has never been any good at this.
Trump Tower was and still is profitable, but some of his golf courses, many of his golf courses were not. Many of his other properties were not. The golf course business or golf resort business is notoriously difficult to make money at, and these things take time. If you're going to build a hotel, build a brand, and get people to come in, I would imagine that would take a while to turn a profit, no?
That's true, and I'm sure that's what the IRS has been wrestling with all this time, is whether or not they can divide this thing up. But when you look at it, is his business really developing real estate, or is it promoting himself? You know, what he's made money at seems to be the celebrity game, spending a lot of money to be rich and glamorous so that people will want to buy things with his name on them. That's what he's good at.
So then is his, I want to go back to the real estate business in just a minute, but about that then, do you feel that $70,000 in haircuts and $100,000 for his daughter in makeup are reasonable expenses because it promotes the allure of the glamour of their brand?
Well, if you think that that haircut makes you look $70,000 more glamorous, then maybe it is. A lot of people in the celebrity game are deducting that sort of thing.
Right. Well, that gets a lot of attention, but I think if you're a public person, your image is, in fact, your brand. You know, it's just another example of how the rich seem to play by different rules than the rest of us. I don't get to deduct my haircut.
It might be excessive, but certainly the principle would hold. You're a radio reporter, but if you were on TV, maybe your haircut would be deductible. So
I'm a little confused about your suggestion that if you're not good at your business, the IRS begins to regard the deductibility of your losses as somehow different than somebody who is successful at business. What business is it of the IRS's if I'm struggling right now?
Well, that actually is very much a rule in the IRS. It's a presumption that if you lose money for more than 3 years in a row, it's a hobby. It's not a business. And a whole different set of rules apply to a hobby. In fact, your revenues are taxable, but your expenses are deductible only as itemized expenses, which is a whole different category, and only to the extent of your revenues. You can't create a loss for tax purposes with a hobby. A lot of writing about the rules related to hobbies versus businesses, but the basic principle is they're going to cooperate with you and allow you to spend money in a lot of ways if they feel that ultimately your goal is to have a profit and you have a reasonable expectation of a profit. You know, you look at some more logical example. Somebody decides they want to become a painter, so they take up art. If they might take art classes to get good at it, they can't deduct those classes because they're teaching them a new job. But once they're in that job, if they take more classes, those would be deductible. Now you're going to be painting. You're painting pictures, you're going to art shows, and you're selling a few paintings, and that's great. But if you don't start selling enough to cover your expenses, they're going to say, you do this because it's your hobby and you like it, or for some other reason, not because you're in the business of this to support yourself.
Is that how the accounting world looks at Donald Trump? Because I'm sure nobody thinks of what he does as a hobby. That's his business. That was his business before The Apprentice.
I think the accounting world has looked at Donald Trump as a business failure for many, many years, and has been astonished at his ability to morph into a celebrity who's instead folding all of this into a giant enterprise. I mean, if I took his accountant's point of view, I'd probably say that all my political campaigning was an attempt to continue to make my brand glamorous and famous and increase my influence as a celebrity. And while we all know that political expenses are not deductible, you could even make a case for that in his context.
Which leads me to this whole business that if, in fact, I mean, shoot, this has been going on since 2008, this disagreement with Donald Trump and the IRS over $73 million in deductions. If that's been going on for 12 years, clearly the law is a little murky on this or undecided. And I think a lot of us are saying, okay, however that thing shakes out, those laws need to be changed. The IRS will demand that I make a payment on my tax bill. If I fail in business, nobody's going to grant me 12 years, especially if I owe $73 million. It seems to me like they're playing by different rules, Terry.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. And I think it's been a topic of discussion in the accounting world for years. If you have lots of money, and even more if you have lots of influence, you can use these laws to feather your own bed. There's a law now passed by the CARES Act that you can do this again. If you have a 2019 loss, you can carry it back for 5 years. That's what he did in 2010. He experienced a great big loss, as a lot of people did after the real estate crash, and he was able to carry it back and offset taxes that he paid in earlier years. That rule was in place for anybody who wanted to make use of it. But who could make use of it? Only people who had the type of business dealings that they could engineer their circumstances and create the most loss in 2010 so they could use it. And I wonder who's benefiting from the one we just passed, the 2019 losses being carried back to 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18. And you're right, only the wealthy could take advantage of that to any significant extent.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the idea that rich people or businessmen and women need to put capital at risk. It's their lives and livelihoods that are the gamble, and so we need to have rules that protect them and encourage that sort of thing. I think I understand that, but it just seems to me like at some point there need to be consequences for that. And if, as a result of being smart and knowing how to use the rules, there are none, then it's a completely different playing field. That, I mean, people don't understand the accounting of this, but they do get the feeling that they get screwed and the rich people don't. And that's, I think, a big takeaway from this whole New York Times story.
Well, I think it is. And you mentioned something else that's important there. You said people put capital at risk to undertake these different businesses. So that's the point. Is the capital at risk or not? If you are doing this with other people's money, which is usually the norm in the real estate business, are you risking your capital or not?
Well, when I buy a house, I'm using other people's capital. I'm using the banks. But they take the house away from me if I can't make my mortgage payments anymore. There's even criminal penalties in some cases.
Right.
That just doesn't seem to be the case here. In fact, it seems to me to be notable that the New York Times is not suggesting that there's a federal crime here. I know some of these cases are in state courts, but they're not saying this guy needs to go to jail. They're just saying, boy, here's how he made the money. Here's how little he paid in taxes.
Well, maybe the question would be, what will he do to stay out of jail or to pay back his loans?
$427 million, maybe. What's your take on that? I mean, do you, as you read this, see some logical end to that money that he's personally signed for?
Well, whoever loaned him that money has to have an expectation of getting paid back one way or another. Is he in the business of creating profitable real estate that will pay back his mortgage? or is he in the business of selling his fame and his influence?
I don't know, but it's amazing to me that Deutsche Bank and some of those people lent him the money. I mean, shame on them, right? I think that's what's the matter.
Banks don't do anything for nothing.
So they had an expectation of making money off of Donald Trump, but evidently...
Oh, I'm sure, one way or another.
Well, sure, but it didn't work out, did it? I mean, it seems to me like the banks are the dopes here. They're the ones that gave this, as you said, the accounting world regards him as a failure. They don't have accountants. They had an expectation that Donald Trump would return a profit when his golf courses and his airlines and a lot of his hotels failed.
I'm sure they were aware of his financial situation when they loaned him the money. I don't know what they want in return.